a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Senate Commerce and Energy on this 25th day of January 2011, and welcome to those listening on the Internet. This time I'd like to remind everybody to please silence your cell phones as not to disturb the proceedings. And with that, I ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Adelstein? Senator Buell?
Here.
Senator Johnson?
Here.
Johnston, sorry. Lederman? Grave?
Here.
Nygaard?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
There's a quorum.
Thank you. Remind everybody who would wish to testify to please sign in so we have proper documentation for the minutes. This time I'd like to introduce our pages for the next couple of weeks. They are Jessica Dury from Webster. Thank you for joining us. And Derek Chase from Huron. We appreciate you being here in the service to the state. With that, we will move on. Excuse me. Did that last meeting, too. I would call for a motion to approve the minutes of our previous meeting. Motion by Johnston, second by Rave. Approve the minutes of our previous meeting. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. With that, we will move to Senate Bill 4. I'm sorry, we are deferring Senate Bill 43 at this time to a later date. They are still hammering out the details, but with that, we will move to Senate Bill 44 and proponent testimony for Senate Bill 44. Mr. Moses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Division of Insurance. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak both to the bill and a couple of amendments that we would like to propose.
Yes, Mr. Moses. Do all the committee members have two amendments for 44? They are titled JA and JB. Mr. Moses, please speak to the bill and the amendments.
Thank you. First of all, as a background for the bill, we ran across some situations where consumers were filling out applications for insurance and asked to determine their own insurability in the application. That is, they were actually put in the role of the underwriter, and by virtue of the way the application was structured, if, in fact, they were wrong and they weren't insurable, the coverage was canceled. And that certainly goes contrary to a basic insurance tenet that application questions or answers to applications are supposed to be representations and not warranties. This crossed the line, we had some difficulties getting some of these insurers straightened around as far as getting them to discontinue this practice, which is the reason we brought the bill, is to specifically prohibit insurers from requiring insurers to determine their own insurability. That's a job for the insurance company's underwriters, not a job for the consumer that's applying for coverage. So that's why we introduced the bill, and that's really what the bill's all about, is trying to draw a real sharp line between representations and warranties and not have insureds verify their own insurability. Through the process of introducing the bill and discussing with interested parties, there were a couple of issues that came up. First of all, and this deals with the First Amendment, 44JA, it was pointed out that not the bill itself, but the existing statute doesn't comply with PACA. And after looking at it, we had to agree that that is, in fact, correct. So this amendment corrects that, and therefore for health insurance plans that are PACA, they're not subject to any provisions of 1, 2, or 3 except 1, so as to be compliant with that federal law. So that's what the First Amendment's about. Secondarily, a number of carriers expressed concern about that the bill could be interpreted so as to not allow them to ask questions or to underwrite applications, deny someone if they felt that they didn't meet their underwriting criteria. And that certainly was not the intent of the bill. The intent was certainly to allow insurance companies to do so. So therefore, we had Amendment 44JB, which expressly allows insurers to ask relevant questions on applications and to underwrite those applicants. So we would encourage you to adopt those two amendments and pass the bill. And with that, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Further proponents for Senate Bill 44. Are there additional proponents for Senate Bill 44? Hearing none, are there opponents to Senate Bill 44? Anyone in opposition to Senate Bill 44? Hearing none, I will close for testimony and open for committee questions and or discussion. Senator Nygaard.
I would like to move Amendment 44JA, if I could. I'd like to move it at the same time. 44JB is all right.
Sure. We'll go ahead and do that. There's a motion by Nygaard, second by Lederman, to the amendments JA and JB. Discussions on the amendments? Hearing none, then, all those in favor of both amendments signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. 44 is amended. Further questions and or discussion for Senate Bill 44 as amended? Senator Nygaard?
Yeah. I'd like to call Mr. Moses back. Could you state your name again?
Randy Moses.
Mr. Moses, how many times has this occurred in the past where there's been an issue over coverage based on this inadequacy and or alleged inadequacy in the statute?
It's difficult for us, Senator, to determine how many times that has occurred. We are aware of multiple instances in the recent past where it's occurred, and we're certainly aware of and researching and finding that it had been on a number of applications for a number of years, so it could well have been going on for quite some time.
Senator Johnston, then Senator Buell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Moses, could you give me an example of what we're describing here?
I guess the most obvious example that I saw on a application that was submitted to our office here just in the last week or two, it said almost, and I won't be able to quote it exactly verbatim, but it basically said that to the applicant that they're signing by this, I am certifying that I am insurable. So I think that's paraphrasing a little bit, but not too far off.
Senator Buell?
I believe Senator Johnston asked essentially the same question I was going to, so thank you.
Thank you. Senator Rave?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Moses, would you explain in 44JB, sub 2, I've read it several times, and I'm just not grasping what you're going for there.
The concern is this, that when a person applies for coverage, the insurance company wants to have the ability to underwrite them. And there's a underwriting process they go through. It could be anywhere from just reviewing the application. For life insurance, it could be, someone undergoing a physical, those kinds of things. If, in fact, the application or whatever their insurance company is looking at, if they determine that the person doesn't meet their criteria, which is what this section is about, then this expressly says that they have the ability to deny that application, which has always been the case. So that's really what we're trying to do, is allow them to act upon the application the way they normally would.
Okay.
Additional questions for Mr. Moses? Senator Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Moses, I guess I'm still a little hazy. In the past, the insurance company's application form has, and I understand what you're saying, it's asking the applicant to swear and affirm or allege, at least in some form, that they're insurable. And then later on, if they're determined to be uninsurable, then the policy is either canceled or deemed to not cover that incident. However, what's the difference between them not doing this and then the underwriter determining as a result of the data gathered and other in due diligence on the application, deciding that they had a pre-existing condition, or they weren't of a certain age, or they weren't of a certain class, whatever. What's the difference?
Sure, I'd be glad to discuss that difference with you. Since you brought up in a health context, I'll discuss it in that health insurance kind of vein. Let's say that we have an applicant for coverage, and on application with company A, they're saying, okay, they're filling out their health history. And they go ahead and fill it out, and the company decides, based upon that health history, you don't qualify, we're not going to issue you coverage. Well, you know that up front. You can go on to company B or do whatever you need to try and find your health insurance in a different way. With this situation where you're trying to determine your own insurability, you say you are, later determined not, they rescind it back to the original date, you had no insurance, you were not able to protect yourself in the interim. And so it's canceled back to the original effective date because they're saying that's a condition precedent to you having coverage.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So really what you're saying, it's a condition precedent, and if you had... The policy never even takes effect under this, if this were enacted, until the underwriter approves the insurability.
I think we're talking about two different things here. That's true with a application, you're not insured in the normal health insurance vein, because we're not talking about a property casualty situation where there's a binder or something like that, until the policy is actually issued. So the insurance company has to approve that application before they're going to issue coverage to you normally. But in this situation we're trying to correct is where the coverage has been issued, and you don't find out till later that, well, they decide that you were, in fact, not insurable. This is different in the situation where somebody omits material information on an application. That's quite another situation. But here we're talking about somebody trying to make a determination themselves as to whether or not they're insurable. That's what we don't want. We want the insurance companies to go ahead and ask the proper questions and either issue the policy or don't issue the policy based on those questions, so you know up front what you're faced with, whether or not you're going to get the insurance.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Senator Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the teeth in this bill to allow you to crack down on companies that use this fraudulent practice?
Thank you, Senator. This would allow us to go ahead and clearly deny any applications that are filed with us, because they have to file applications with us for many kinds of insurance. Secondarily, when we find the practice going on, if it's a violation of the title, we have other provisions that allow us to take action against insurers for violating any provision of the title. So in a couple different respects, we have sufficient authority, if this is passed, to prohibit this kind of practice.
Additional questions from the committee? Discussion. Senator Nygaard.
Yes, I guess I'm still trying to figure out if it's been an abuse among insurers who have taken advantage of this self-proclamation of being insurable and then cruising along taking premiums up until an incident, which might never occur, or may occur 5 years later, and then saying that, oh, you weren't covered. I see a lot of heads nodding, or I see the head nodding of our proponent, so perhaps I could just ask, Mr. Chairman, could I have him come back and just affirm that? Mr. Roses.
Thank you. You're exactly correct. That is the problem. And in fact, that the person could go along, think they have coverage, then it gets rescinded back to the original effective date. In other words, there's never coverage. And that's what we don't want. We want people to know up front whether or not they have the coverage.
Well, just follow up. And then they would have to rescind or remit those premium dollars, if that's the case.
Not all applications require premiums up front, but if, in fact, an application is declined, they certainly are required to refund the premiums. That's true.
Further questions while Mr. Moses is still up here? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moses. Committee discussion.
Chair.
Senator Johnston.
I make a motion to pass.
Motion by Johnston, second by Lederman. Do pass. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none then, all in favor of a do pass motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed say nay. As amended, thank you. Again, do pass motion for 44 as amended. All in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein? Buell?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Grave?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Yay.
Nelson?
Aye.
Unanimous. Six. What is that one?
Senate Bill 44 as amended, receiving a unanimous vote of those present, is sent to the floor. Any further action on 44? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to Senate Bill 57. Senator Maher.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. State Senator Ryan Maher from District 28, which includes all of northwestern South Dakota. Some familiar faces from our previous committee meeting.
Same room.
Yeah. Senate Bill 57. During the last election campaign, we were hearing from our small Main Street businesses about the unemployment trust fund and the surcharges that went on. And I've provided you a little bit of a handout of some of the information I've kind of gathered as we go through this. But all Senate Bill 57 does is, if you see on like page 2, line 14, we start out at a rate of 60% for less than 1% under the reserve ratio in column B. In 2008, we dropped that to 58%. In 2009, we dropped it to 56. In 2010, on line 17, page 3, we drop it to 55%. And the change to this bill is dropping for 2011, it drops it to 53%, just another 2% for those in the category who are paying in at a rate of less than 1%. What does that mean as far as dollars are concerned? If you flip to second page of your handout, I received an email from Pam Roberts via the Legislative Research Council, and it says, the total amount of the investment fee paid in 2010 for experience-rated employers, as you requested, which would be for those of 1% or less, was $7,153,081. This includes the three quarters at a rate of 55% for the first, second, and third quarter of 2010, and for the first quarter at the rate of 56% for the fourth quarter. And that's because as employers, you pay your unemployment insurance for October, November, and December is always paid in the following fiscal year or in the following year. And that dropped it to 55% for the 2010. So if we take that $7 million, and I'm guessing times 2%, you're looking at about $150,000 tax reduction to our Main Street businesses. Now, you throw that across the state, you're not talking about a whole lot of money going back to our Main Streets, but it still is $150,000 that stays on our Main Street businesses. And if you look at the next page of your handout, you can see, and this comes from Bob Mercer, and he wrote about this on his Pure Politics. And in the middle of this, the key sentence is that the bottom line of the changes made by the legislature in the last legislative session amounts to an annual tax increase of more than $20 million for our South Dakota businesses. So last year, because of the surcharges and the unemployment insurance, we went out and we collected to shore up that fund of about $20 million. This is an opportunity to give a little bit of tax relief back to our Main Street businesses. It's not much, but it's something. So, and you can also see on the first page of your handout what the amount that has been going into that fund for the last, from 07, 08, 09, and 10. And so you can see what tax revenues have been coming into that fund. And so in my opinion, $150,000 that may stay on our Main Streets is something better than nothing. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Senator Maher. Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 57? Additional proponents for Senate Bill 57? Are there opponents to Senate Bill 57? Those in opposition to Senate Bill 57? Hearing none, then, I will open it up for questions of the committee. Senator Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Roffer. Senator, if this bill is not enacted, that $150,000, what happens to it?
It stays in, excuse me, it'll stay in its current fund, which is also known as the Futures Fund.
Well, it stays in the Futures Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good.
And then that money is then transferred to GOED.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the email where it says we transferred $11,712,000 to the GOED January 1st through December 31st of 2010. And that's kind of some historical history there for you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Senator Maher. By virtue of your last statement that the money would go to the future fund, wouldn't this bill be counterproductive to the efforts to continue to grow in business, to grow and develop new businesses in our communities?
I guess in some regards, but yet at the same time, futures fund dollars are targeted to more metropolitan areas versus less than the more rural areas. You know, you're seeing your investments go. If Futures Fund was originally developed back under the Mickelson administration for, I guess, a little history to for workforce development, and that I think it was brought about because of the perspective for closure of the Morrell plant in Sioux Falls and how to retrain that workforce is what I've been told over the years. And so we developed the Futures Funds for worker education. I guess I'm of the opinion that we don't see a whole lot of that money being redistributed up into northwestern South Dakota for much of anything. And if we can give them just a little bit of benefit back into their small onto our main streets, it's something better than nothing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions of Senator Maher?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Buell.
Thank you. Senator Maher, you said that about $150,000 would go back to Main Street businesses around the state. Can you give us a ballpark for how much that an average business might see back in their pocket?
Maybe a dollar or two. But it's not going to be a whole lot because you're only taking it off your 1% or less at a ratio of 53%. You know, it's not a whole lot of money that these businesses are going to see.
All right. Thank you.
But I guess if you look at it this way, $150,000, and if you figure the economic turnover across the state, then you're talking about some serious dollars that, you know, collectively can be doing something else, whether it's, you know, maybe one more business can hire another employee, even though it's not that much money we're talking about.
Senator Nygaard.
Mr. Maher, Senator Maher, was the Secretary of Labor, Pam Roberts, she was in favor of this bill?
I cannot answer that correctly. I just got the email from her. Nobody from the department showed up to oppose it, which was...
Right. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, Senator Maher. With that, then, I will open it up for committee discussion. Senator Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in my other life, I'm a businessman in a smaller town, Vermilion. I know they wouldn't like for me to say that, but it is a small town. And I did notice, of course, that our unemployment insurance went up, and I'm glad to see that it's coming back down. And I do think that if... I think it's more than a dollar in some cases, depending upon how many employees you have. So I would tend to be in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rave.
I move do pass.
Motion by Rave, second by Lederman, do pass. Discussion on the motion?
I don't think any more is necessary.
Motion, the question on the floor is do pass of Senate Bill 57. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein. Buell.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Unanimous 6.
Senate Bill 57, having received a unanimous vote of the committee members present, is sent to the floor with a do pass motion. Senator Maher, I would trust you will take this in caucus and on the floor. Thank you, Senator Maher. With that, then we have completed our calendar for the day. We will meet again on Thursday, 10 a.m. Motion to adjourn, moved by Rave, second by Nygaard. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you.